Hey guys, what's going on? It's Britton here at the Honor Your Barbell podcast. I wanted to bring Nicole in today. We're going to talk about something very specific, something we see all the time. I actually recently saw an article on Facebook that brought up this exact topic. And to be honest, my mind was blown. The topic talked about how everybody doesn't necessarily have to squat below parallel. And me, with my sports background, my fitness background, I have always been taught that if it's not below parallel, it does not count. Nicole, yes. is this true?
Yeah, so this is funny. Brenton brought this up to me and kind of asked my opinion on it. And we kind of started going back and forth and we were like, yeah, let's just do this on podcast so everyone can kind of hear. And you guys are welcome to like weigh in on your opinion and whatnot that way.
Now, this is going to be all opinion-based, correct?
Correct, yeah. This is opinion-based. I think a lot of this topic is opinion-based. I mean, you could argue that there's, whatever, scientific research one way or the other and blah, blah, blah. But a lot of fitness is not scientific research, and it's just kind of managing the individual you have in front of them. So I think there's a lot of different needs for different people, and this whole, like, we need to be below parallel every single time, all the time, kind of gets taken to an extreme in certain instances. And so that's kind of what we're going to discuss here.
So. Okay, cool. So let's get it started right away. Why does somebody teach somebody to squat below parallel? What's the benefits to squatting below parallel?
Yeah, so most of us have been doing functional fitness because of CrossFit and because of being in a CrossFit gym or competing in CrossFit. And people have to understand that the entity of CrossFit is a competition base, right? Like, yes, it's for everybody, but it is a competition base, and all competitions need to have rules and standards. So their standard to be able to standardize everybody to one specific set of rules is below parallel, hip crease below the knee crease, right? Now, in other fitness facilities that are not CrossFit based, you'll see people encouraging that as well. I encourage all my weightlifters to squat below parallel because that is where they're going to catch a clean. I also encourage all my able-bodied people, no matter if they're concerned about competing in fitness or not, that they get below parallel because that is a full range of motion.
And what do we get out of using full range of motion? Why would we want to do that?
Full range of motion is really important because it'll allow all of the muscle groups around those joints, the hips, the knees, and the back, to work in unison and to work to their full potential. You are gonna be weakest at the point of basically where you're untrained. So if you're squatting, you know, 3 inches above or 3 inches above your bottom position, but then you're gonna catch a clean in the bottom position, you're gonna fail your clean at those 3 inches, right? So we wanna train full range of motion so that we have strength and stability in all of our surrounding muscles through that entire range of motion.
Perfect. So what are the benefits then to not squatting below parallel? Why would you ever, what's a circumstance where I would want to have either a client or a member not squat to parallel, below parallel, any of that?
Right, so very specific instances, I would say require an adjustment to parallel or at parallel we do for a lot of people and above parallel in some cases. And that would be really, if somebody's mobility is that bad or their range of motion is that bad, and forcing them below parallel actually compromises something else, like their lower back or their core, until they can actually maintain a quality position below parallel, we might wanna just cut their range of motion a little bit, work on that range of motion or work on that stability, and then eventually bring them down. Another instance would be like a pretty serious injury. I worked out with a guy once that was an amputee, and he was a vet and an amputee, and his bottom of his squat was literally at parallel because he had a prosthetic leg, and the way it moved, it just, that was it. And he was really strong. He snatched over 100 kilos, but it kind of, everything had to be at parallel, and that was going to be his end range of motion, and we needed to get him strong there. Something else, like maybe some kind of joint replacement, knee replacement, serious knee or shin replacement or injury, anything like that that may actually hinder strength below parallel or put somebody in a bad position for a different joint, we would probably want to cut their range of motion, and that's totally fine.
Cool. So a lot of times in fitness facilities, you'll have a client that says, well, I can't squat because A, B, and C, or I can't squat that deep.
Right.
How do we acknowledge that? How do we adjust that? And how do we learn from that? Without immediately going, well, okay, cool, you don't have to squat below parallel.
Yeah, so my goal is always, I mean, whether it's squatting below parallel, whether, you know, I coach a lot of weightlifting, and probably out of every 10 people I talk to, 7 of them tell me, yeah, well, I can't snatch because my overhead mobility sucks. And a lot of times, like for me, that's just like, well, okay, yeah, everyone says that. And the below parallel is kind of the same thing. People will tell me, you know, yeah, I don't clean very well because I just can't catch in a squat. You know, I just don't have that range of motion. And so when I hear that, immediately I want to see you move. And I start to think about, like, well, what would be the steps, or what would be the building blocks to get you strong enough to be below parallel, or to be at your full range of motion safely? Or is it possible? And then if it is possible, you know, how do we get there? So immediately, I don't think we should go to, okay, well, you don't need to squat below parallel. Or immediately, I don't think we need to go to, well, you need to squat below parallel or it doesn't count. I think you need to take each person on a case-by-case basis and kind of decide what you're going to do as a coach to actually get them in a strong, safe squat position at their end range of motion, not the end range of motion that competition standards hold.
Cool. So as a coach, what's, you know, essentially one of the first things that you look at as far as somebody comes in, you have them doing an air squat? What are immediately going to be some of the cues or positioning that you look at, parts of the body that you look at that could potentially cause red flags one way or the other?
Yeah, so even though it's a squat, initially I always look at the torso, right? Because you want to make sure that the back and core are always safe, especially if we're going to start adding load to this movement, which the squat we are. So I always look at the torso. So I want that nice back position and that nice curve, and I want it maintained the entire time. If they get to the point where they fall, their chest is falling forward or their butt is tucking under, right? That's the first thing we want to fix. And we want to kind of raise them up until right before that breaks down, get them strong there, and then little by little increase that range. The next thing I would look at is the way their hips are tracking, and that you could look at their knees that way. So if their knees are pulling together as they go down or as they go up, right? That's usually a instability or a weakness in the hip joint. And that's something that then we want to work on. And again, pull them up higher in the squat until those kind of faults go away. And then once they get better there, then you move them down and lower and lower. The last thing that a lot of people struggle with the squat, and they don't actually know, is ankle mobility. So if you have the inability to kind of push your knee forward over your toe, right? If your shin's going to stay totally vertical in the squat, you're not going to be a very good squatter, and below parallel is going to be very uncomfortable for you. So that would be the final thing I look at, is kind of their ankle mobility and kind of strengthening that and exercising that to be able to have that ankle flexion to get all the way in the bottom of a squat comfortably.
So basically we're starting at the hip joint, working down, looking at the knee positioning, and then the ankle flexibility are kind of your main three there.
Top down. And that's kind of what every movement should look like, right? Whenever you correct movement, you always want to go from the center out. Because if you do that, you're going to keep the athlete safe. You know, if their core and back aren't stable or safe and we're worried about their ankles, well, we could fix their ankles, put a barbell on their back, and then they hurt their back because we never even looked at their core and back. So when correcting movement or really working on fixing movement patterns, it's always best to work from the middle out.
Perfect. Yeah. So another thing that's came up a lot is, and we just talked about kind of like the variances as far as the movement, depth, mobility, whatever you want to call that. What about the variances in how the squat is performed? And what I mean by that is low bar back squat, high bar front squat, chain squat, band squat, you know, box squat. There's tons of variances. How do those come into play, and where can they help an athlete or even just a human being perform at a better level?
Yeah, so I think we always have to keep in mind what the person that we're dealing with, what their goal is, right? So I coach primarily weightlifters. So in weightlifting, we train the squat as an accessory to the clean, because the clean is the movement that we compete in, right? We don't compete in the squat. So it doesn't really help us to pack as much as we can on the barbell, put it on low bar and squat it, and then it's totally different than the position our clean is in. So the way you train the squat should be a direct correlation with the reason you're training the squat. So in powerlifting, you are actually competing in the squat, right? And the goal is to put the most weight on the bar and get it slightly below parallel. So that would be the low bar back squat. Now, most people that we deal with at this gym and at most gyms I've ever been to, it's just general physical preparedness, right? Just people that want to live better, live more comfortably, stay in shape, move better, be healthy, etc. So for those people, we want to think about the movements that they're going to be doing. They're going to be getting in and out of a chair. They're going to be bending down to pick something off the floor. They're going to be sitting on the floor and standing up. So for those movements, we do want full range. So I would always train the high bar back squat mostly and use the other things, banded squats, chain squats, low bar squats as very intermittent accessory work. So
what is that? So what do you mean by that?
So that means like, not as frequent as the full lift in its basically purest form, which is the full range of motion back squat, right? So maybe once or twice a month we do an accessory to the squat, like a banded squat or a bent or a chain squat, a belt squat, a box squat, things like that to kind of vary the movement and put a different kind of stimulus on the person. But that should not really be the main aspect that we're training, because that's not the movement, right? The movement is a full range of motion squat with your chest upright to move load safely. So I think sometimes those things that should be intermittent accessories kind of get overused by coaches because they're kind of flashy and they look kind of cool. It kind of makes you seem like you know what you're doing, right? But we have to remember that those are always accessories to the movement. That's not the movement we're trying to train, especially for our competition sports, our weightlifting, powerlifting even, and our general physical preparedness, just our regular people trying to stay in shape.
Cool. I love it. So the last thing we can talk about, we've just been really diving into the squat here. I want to keep going. Just one last piece here. As an athlete, Nicole, when you know you have a heavy squat day, let's talk a little bit about your nutrition on that side. So, you look at your program for the week, Monday morning or Monday, your program says heavy back squats. We're talking above 85%. Is there going to be any changes, particularly, during the day before, the morning of, even after, as far as nutrition goes on those heavy squat days?
Yeah. People get that to me, give me that question all the time as a nutrition coach. There's a few things that you really want to pay attention to around max effort days, which could be the squat, or for me, the clean and jerk is actually the harder max day than the squat, right? Obviously, because you're putting it over your head. But for most people, the squat is going to be one of the heaviest lifts, or the deadlift, that they deal with on a day-to-day basis. So looking towards those heavy days with nutrition, that would be the day. If you're a morning person, if you work out in the morning with those heavy movements, you would want to do a higher carb day or a high intake day the day before. If you're somebody that works out at night, like 5 p.m. or after, and you're going to have most of your food in you by the time you get to the gym to do that heavy session, you probably want to do the high intake day on that same day. Another thing that I've personally found, and I've really been trying to be good about this with my own nutrition, is keeping it very clean and very high quality food, nutrient dense foods, low sugar.
So just because I'm in a squat, I can't just pound like a bunch of donuts and cereal?
Yeah, that's probably a bad idea. I just find like some people can handle that. Some people don't have, you know, arthritic joints, or sugar doesn't really affect them in a negative way. But I usually challenge those people to clean it up before and to really get that high intake day on really clean food and see the difference. You may think that it doesn't affect you, and then you know, actually take the steps to make it cleaner nutrition and you see how much it does. I know for me, my joints hurt so bad when I've, you know, just been pounding sugar or processed food. And sometimes for me to get my high intake days, I do that. And I've really tried to avoid doing that around serious training days because I just feel so much better. My energy levels are better. My recovery is better. My knees aren't aching in the morning. My hands aren't swollen. All that stuff will really play a part in making your performance better on heavy days, which will ultimately enhance your training a lot more.
And that's great. I think that you hit it right on the head, you know, making sure that your body's prepared for it and being knowledgeable about, you know, the ins and outs of what your body reacts to the most. And as far as inflammation goes, I think that that's going to be a huge deciding factor as far as how you feel with your knees, your hips, things like that going into those heavy squat days.
Yeah, I think I kind of like, you know, when I first, obviously I wrote an article, you know, like 4 years ago called How Donuts Gave Me Abs. And when I wrote that, I didn't think that 70,000 people were eventually going to read it and critique it and stuff like that. And I think some people find it now and they're still like, oh, this is a girl that just eats donuts and lifts really heavy. And it's like, well, when I wrote that, I was writing for like maybe 25 people, you know, and that's not the message that wants to kind of be like conveyed. And still, you know, 5 years later, I'll see somebody at a random gym or at a random meet and they'll be like, oh, we're donuts, gains, right? That's how you make the gains. And it's like really, I don't want to use the word ignorant, but it's like really ignorant to me because, you know, you're not going to make quote unquote gains with the Z with like processed sugar and, you know, fried food and all that stuff. So we really need to be smart, especially around very serious or very heavy training days, that we prepare our bodies right and we have our joints ready to go and kind of our mind nice and clear and ready to take on some heavy weight.
Cool. The last thing I want to talk about here is rest periods in between sets. I know that for our clients, we prescribe those rest periods. Let's talk a little bit about why that's important. As far as the way the body works, maybe potentially a little CNS, we'll get nerdy for a second. But what's the benefit and what's the importance of taking the proper rest time in between heavy sets?
Yeah, so you want to make sure, especially on your higher loads, load lifts, the squat and the deadlift, that you are resting a bigger period of time or a longer period of time between, especially as that barbell gets heavy. So on your really heavy sets or high volume sets, sets of 10 or something like that, you want to make sure you're getting an ample amount of rest time so that when you get on the bar again, you can give maximal effort and you're ready to go. If you start to limit those rest times, those sets might get slower, or they may get, you may get out of position a little bit more because you're tired, and that's when things start to break down. That's when you're at the potential to get hurt. So we at the gym prescribe rest for our members and our clients, and honestly, we do that just as a safety measure in case they don't realize how heavy the squat is, or in case they're in a rush or something like that, right? If you have higher level athletes, high level weightlifters or power lifters that know how they feel and how their body, if their body's ready or not for another set, sometimes you don't have to actually prescribe them. But making sure that your clients are resting fully between sets and are ready to go, like both mentally and they are physically feel like they're ready to go for another set, is really important. So don't just coach the movement, actually coach everything in between as far as rest periods and what your athletes are doing. If you're doing heavy back squats, you know, the athletes shouldn't be walking around talking to each other between sets. They should be either sitting or just not moving, standing in one place, just waiting to do their next set and kind of conserving energy and letting that CNS recoup for the next set.
Cool. Well, we definitely dove deep into the ins and outs of the squat. If you guys have any comments, questions, please feel free to hit us up on Facebook or Instagram. We would love to get some more conversation and potentially do another podcast about this topic. It's a very familiar topic, but also a topic that has a lot of educational background behind it and also some opinions. So we're excited to hear what you guys have to say about this podcast. Be sure to subscribe and be better on your barbell.
Yes.